Here, Rabbi Berman, he is
from South Africa.
Yeah, yeah. He's discussing when he was a pastoral rabbi that he had his congregants would approach him and say, "You know, I'm not religious, I'm spiritual." And he's saying, you know, when you keep on that level, you know, just you know, pretty spiritual, just because you know that he's equating that to like an indulgence, like anything else, and that's like the function of the nefesh behemah. So saying just for so you know, I mean, I hear this often. You know, a person says, "Well, I'm not religious, I don't need Torah." You know, I'm actually spiritual. He's saying that's an indulgence. You know, it's indulgence like anything else, like materialism, like physical. So you know, I mean, it's you know, you're satisfying a need. You know, a need to connect to something. So you're spiritual, but I mean, not existing within any confines like halacha. So I mean, in Judaism, you know, the fact that you know we emphasize spirituality, we emphasize it more so as a necessary aspect of life, I guess, like an intrinsic part of our being, and that in order, the only way to connect it to each other is through halakha, as opposed to an indulgence. I mean, could you say that's the difference?
Well, I'm happy to hear he's talking at a very deep level there. First of all, satisfying the need is not quite the right way to describe the wrong position. Let's do that for a moment. The key difference is it focused subjectively or objectively? Is spirituality, I do something in myself? Or is spirituality how I relate to an object of reality? It's a little bit like the difference between writing a novel and doing science. Now, it's not perfect, but it's close. Writing a novel, you're making up a fantasy. All that you have to do is make sure that the fantasy is consistent and appealing. Science, I got to figure out what the tables may have. And will not do for me to make up my own ideas. I have to agree with what's the reality. So, for many people, spirituality is a kind of private fantasy. For us, spirituality means relating to an objective reality. On its terms, because there aren't any other terms. A very striking illustration of this is Viktor Frankl, in his book Man's Search for Meaning, mentions the case of a woman who was dying in a hospital, and he said the last few days were made much more bearable by her having a dialogue with the tree outside her window. Dialogue, not monologue. Dialogue means both sides are talking. And what he means is that it may be more meaningful by a fantasy. Right? More bearable by a fantasy. I wouldn't deny a dying person anything that would help, but that's not our goal, that's not our picture of personality. That's what it makes me feel good. It's a way of relating to the ultimate reality.
So when it is just an indulgence, or you said like a personal fantasy, it's a function of the nefesh behemah, as opposed
to the... Okay, now I'll review what I said yesterday. Questions arose, when I asked questions today, we'll do it again, then we'll go on. The question is tshuva a mitzvah, or is it just a procedure? Procedure for ridding oneself of the consequences of one's affairs. Without it being a mitzvah to do it. Procedure, like shechita, like gerushin. You make meat kosher to eat by doing shechita. You dissolve a marriage by gerushin. There's a mitzvah to do those things. You don't get any reward for doing it. It's a procedure that has consequences. Is tshuva like that? Or is tshuva also a positive mitzvah, a positive performance? I gave you views on both sides. The second, that it is a positive command, was based on Halacha's Vav and Zayin of the second parak, where the Rambam says that everyone is obligated to tshuva on Yom Kippur. The word obligated, it leaves out at the beginning. the beginning, all he says is, when you do tshuva, you're obligated to confess. So the first group of commentators jumped on the fact that it says, when you do tshuva, you're obligated to confess. They say, you're obligated to do tshuva. So this group says, okay, but turn to the middle of the second paragraph, second chapter, and you see that there he does say you're obligated. Now, why are you obligated on Yom Kippur? Not because it is a mitzvah of Yom Kippur, because Rambam does not quote the verse of Pnei Hashem Tetzaru, purify yourselves before God. That's the verse about Yom Kippur, he doesn't quote that verse. Unlike other Rishonim who do quote it, he doesn't quote it. His reason, he says, is that Yom Kippur is the end. So, the case, the end of pardon and forgiveness to the Jewish people, therefore everyone is obligated to do tshuva. So, we explain what that meant with the analogy of tefillin, the analogy of bris milah. Tefillin, you have to put on every day. Of course, you have the whole day to do it. Couldn't tell the person that 9 o'clock in the morning has to put on tefillin now because puts them on in the afternoon. When it comes to the last 3 minutes of the day, then you can tell them you're obligated now because if you don't do it now, you're going to lose it altogether. The person does a transgression in January, although it's praiseworthy, appropriate to do tshuva right away, you have all the time through the end of your kippur. But if the whole period goes by to the end of Kippur and the person doesn't do tshuva, then he has violated the positive commandment of tshuva, which is an absolute obligation to do tshuva. But it has a time period. So the Rambam says tshuva is appropriate, your office is worth, from the time of the transgression, and Yom Kippur, you're fine to do tshuva. The implication will be the person does his transgression in January and goes all the way through Yom Kippur without tshuva, he has then violated the obligation of doing tshuva. Just like a person lets a whole day go by and doesn't put on tefillin, he's violated the obligation of putting on tefillin that day. Of course, unlike tefillin, he can make it up. Next year he can do tshuva too. But now he's a double liability. He ate the cheeseburger in January, and he let them keep it go by without doing tshuva. So now he has two liabilities, two transgressions. He has to do tshuva on both of them. Yeah.
So tefillin is once the day goes by, the whole day you're over. Is tefillin by tshuva from January on?
No. The analogy is this: one day of tefillin is compared to January through Yom Kippur. It's one period of time. Not day by day. One period of time. So on those grounds, it is an obligation, and it's an obligation at that time. You with me so far? Then we say with this, you can answer a very clever riddle. Rambam and others say that a person who's on Rosh Hashanah is 50-50, is bound over to Yom Kippur, does tshuva, then his judgment is resolved for good. Doesn't do tshuva, then his judgment is resolved for bad. So we said, what about all the other mitzvahs that we could do? Well, it's a very secret do between Rosh Hashanah and Kippur. They don't count because the judgment is not last year. It's not about this year. Rosh Hashanah and Kippur is the new year. Okay, now, if he does tshuva, that takes off an aveira from last year. So he was 50-50, takes off one aveira. So the good side goes down. Ah, but he doesn't do tshuva, then the bad side goes down. Why would not doing tshuva on Yom Kippur change the bad side of last year? How can not doing tshuva have a retroactive effect? Doing tshuva clearly has a retroactive effect, takes off that aveira from last year. How can not doing tshuva have a retroactive effect? So what do we say? Okay, so in other words, let's ask about tefillin. A person lets the whole day go by without tefillin. What is the definition of the transgression? What went wrong? It was a tefillin-less day. When was the transgression? The whole day. Yes, he could have corrected it in the last 3 minutes. If he had put on tefillin in the last 3 minutes, he would have corrected it. But if he didn't correct it, if he didn't put on tefillin, then the definition of transgression is a day without tefillin. So when is the transgression? The whole day, not just the last 3 minutes. Similarly, a person who does the transgression in January and doesn't do the teshuva to the end of Yom Kippur, when is the transgression? From January to Yom Kippur. So that adds a transgression to last year. And that's how the bad side can go down. Okay? That's the idea of sort of being a mitzvah, being an obligation. Yeah.
The previous point mentioned that Jewish isn't a mitzvah. The person doesn't have to divorce his wife. That's right. Well, to a certain extent, Shuvah also has an aspect to it. The person doesn't have to do it. Obviously, everyone does a bear, but there are exceptions to some people who are confused about being mitzvah. Intrinsic in Shuba is having to do an Aveir. It doesn't have to be done. Everyone does do Aveir. You don't have to do it.
Look, you're right. You're right. The truth is that mitzvahs are classified in a variety of ways. There was talk. I don't know how serious it was, but people said, I'm supposed to do all sorts of 13 commandments, right? One of them is, return what you stole. Now, how do I do that? I guess I better steal something, huh? So that then I can get to do the bits of returning what I stole? Probably not right. That's probably not the right way to look at it. You're better off keeping your hands out of other people's pockets. Don't steal it belongs to so that you can take the opportunity to give it back. Now, there are commandments that are conditional on circumstances. Let me ask you what you think. Do you think that Abraham ever performed the commandment of mezuzah? Maybe it's intense. So there's no doorpost. Just no place to put it. Right? You live in a tent. You just don't do that. Right? So now, there are commandments that are conditional. So, I wouldn't, leaving out mysticism now, but I wouldn't, in the legal sense, I wouldn't think of Abraham as second class if he never did mezuzah, if he never lived in a house. But if he lived in a house, then he definitely has to put a mezuzah. There are no circumstances, or almost no circumstances, under which you ought to, divorce your wife, or you ought to shecht an animal. Right? The mitzvah doesn't apply that way. Tshuva applied, as you said, if a person does a transgression, then you ought to do tshuva. Doing the tshuva is the way of correcting the failure of the transgression.
Even if a person doesn't have to do anything, he does, because everyone doesn't have to do that.
That's right. I'd say the same thing about tshuva that I would say about mezuzah. But not about gerushin. If a person avoids the veiris, then he doesn't have to do the tshuva. If a person avoids, I'm mixing in a lot of things so that it could be unraveled. If a person doesn't live in a house, he doesn't have to put up the mezuzah. If a person doesn't have a veiris, he doesn't have to do the tshuva. Correct. But.
Right. If a person doesn't have a veiris, he has to do the tshuva. So if a person divorces his wife, then he has to give her, basically, a divorce. Which way he's done to them as well.
Yeah, but there's nothing telling him he's got to divorce his wife. Here, if he's done an Aveira, he's got to do tshuva.
Nothing's telling him to do an Aveira.
Correct, but once it happens, it's a trigger condition. Once it happens, then he's got to do tshuva.
So
there's no trigger condition for divorcing your wife.
A person could argue that there is, that he has a bad marriage, now it's triggered. He's forced to divorce. He's not forced, but somebody is forced to do an Aveira.
If she does certain things, then right. Maybe he has to divorce her.
Right.
It could be under those circumstances, right? Yeah.
If a woman wants a divorce, luckily is not forced to. So it's a mitzvah to give a divorce. Would it be an aveira if he didn't at that point?
Well, no. First of all, the mere fact that a woman wants a divorce does not make it into a mitzvah to give her a divorce. It's not always a mitzvah to give people everything they want. What happens under those conditions is you go to a bedroom and the court. Here's this, both sides and decides whether there should be a divorce or shouldn't be a divorce. If the court decides there should be a divorce,
they can't really force the husband to give a divorce.
Oh, yes, they can.
But it's very difficult.
Oh, no, it's not. The secular government makes it difficult.
What?
The secular government makes it difficult.
It's easier to get a government divorce than a
No, it isn't. If we had
a divorce without,
if you listen, I guess it's the end of the sentence. I'll be able to explain it to you. If we had the power to put into effect our laws, our Lord say, beat him until he says yes. Nobody stands up to that. And I know cases where they called him down to the yeshiva for one last conference. Took him into a back room, and he said yes. Our laws do not allow a husband to tyrannize his wife for not giving a yes. We don't allow that.
Like two huge casinos or something?
Six or seven, actually. You know, with clubs, with clubs and steel spike boots, and you know, they'll let him have it until he says yes. Right? It's only that the secular courts don't give us the power to do it. Anyway, but this has nothing to do with you. We're just now spinning off.
I think from yesterday arose, I forgot what the question was, but we didn't, I don't properly understand what you is. I don't understand it's from the return to godliness. Spiritually, you can get closer to godliness even if you haven't done the veras. You can still do tshuva, but you can get closer, you can return.
Okay, you're absolutely right. Now, this is a deep point. This is a deep point. Tshuva, I was going to talk about this later, but let's take the word apart. The word tshuva means return. Return means you used to be somewhere, and you distance yourself from that place, and you're going back to it. That's what return means. So the standard idea is transgressions are stepping away, and tshuva, we covered that distance. Brings you back to where you were before. That's definitely true. But it's not the only way to apply the idea. It's not the only way to apply the idea. The soul was once in a direct communion with God. Coming into this world sets up a gigantic qualitative distance between the soul and God. The word tshuva can be applied to that return as well. Climbing back, even while in this world, climbing back into a closer relationship with God. In this respect, Hasidim in particular talked about doing tshuva on your mitzvot. Not only your transgressions, but the mitzvot that you do. How well did you do the mitzvot? With how much dedication? With how much concentration? With how much joy? A person could say, yes, I did it, but I didn't do it as well as I could have, as well as I should have. And the tshuva even on its acceptance, because they can be relative failures. Rosh Hashanah took it even a step further. When a person does tshuva, why did you tshuva? What brings him to the tshuva? What stimulates the idea of tshuva? Very often it is that things go bad. God forbid he gets ill, he loses his money, he's in an accident. And he thinks, why did this happen to me? He realizes there's something wrong, tries to improve. Later on, says Rosh Hashanah, he should reflect. Why did it take a slap to wake me up to realize that I should do tshuva? Why didn't I realize it on my own? Why didn't I realize it at the moment when it happened? That's evidence of a great insensitivity. So then, said the Baal Shem Tov, you may have to do tshuva on your tshuva. Tshuva is a wonderful thing, but it could have been and should have been done in a higher fashion. Now, the common thread to all of these is what he said. I must tell you, there's a book called After the Return, written by Mordechai Becher and Israel Newman. It's a handbook for people who have done tshuva, want to do tshuva, how to live, what their priorities are, how to deal with their families. They asked me to write the introduction, which I did. I raised this very question. We talk about Bali tshuva. That's not the way the term is used in traditional terms. Traditional terms, Bali tshuva is a person who's raised in a firm home, and it's a firm person, and made mistakes, failures, and he prepared himself. Growing up in a non-religious home, the term Baal Tshuva, as has been used classically, doesn't seem to apply. But I found the Sfas Emes, one of the great Hasidic commentators, who says what I told you now, that tshuva can be applied to growing back into a closer relationship with God, even within the context of this world, without having done anything wrong. So it can be, it can refer to any kind of return in that, fashion. That's quite good. Okay, that's what we did yesterday.
Yeah. What was the author
again in that book after
return?
Mordechai Becker. And Israel Newman. Now, we spoke briefly yesterday about what happens if you do choose. What effect does it have? And we spoke about it's wiping out your responsibility for failures. The truth is, it's not quite so simple. A Rambam, in the first chapter, says the following. He discusses what the sacrifice did, particular sacrifice in Kippur. I'm not going to go into that. Says in our times, when there's no temple, we only have tshuva. Tshuva mechaperes. Mechaperes means atones, cleanses, for all transgressions. Even a person who was wicked his whole life and did tshuva at the end, none of his transgressions are mentioned. He's never reminded of any of his transgressions. And Yom Kippur also cleanses, atones, those who have done tshuva. Now, crucial qualification. Even though tshuva cleanses on everything, and Yom Kippur cleanses, there are those transgressions that are fully atoned instantly, and there are those that take more time. I had to work, now there's four categories. Take from Mishnah Yumin. A person violates a simple positive command that does not carry curses or punishment. Didn't put on tefillin, didn't bench after a meal, didn't give charity, didn't wave a lulav, didn't hear shofar, didn't eat matzah, and does tshuva, he's instantly forgiven. That's a simple positive command. That is simple, I mean, it doesn't carry special penalty. Violate a simple negative commandment, doesn't carry any special penalty. Then tshuva, tola. Tola means to hang. It hangs it up. It suspends it. Tshuva suspends it, and Yom Kippur cleanses. Yom Kippur's over, it's gone. Violate the commandment that carries one of these special penalties, Christ's judicial execution or whatever. Tshuva and Yom Kippur suspend, and suffering finishes the atonement. Any commandment that carries a special penalty, Christ is present. And the fourth category, if the person desecrates God's name, then tshuva, Yom Kippur, and suffering suspend, and the cleansing, the atonement, is completed only with death. Four categories. What it means is this. If a person does tshuva, he's guaranteed to leave this world clean. That's what tshuva guarantees. To leave this world clean. But when the cleansing process takes place, and what is required for the cleansing process to take place, required to happen to him, depends upon the category of transgression.
So obviously there's a specific tshuva that you do for specific averas. Is there a specific type of tshuva you do for like not eating kosher, as opposed to, you know, a tshuva for not
not in what we've talked about here. No, there'll be one qualification. If you hurt somebody else, you've got to rectify what you did to the other person. But aside from that, no. The general definition of what you mean is
it's universal.
Yeah. So, again, Shuva guarantees that when you leave this world, you leave clean. Shuva is all you have to do, but other things might have to happen. Other things might have to happen. Now, already you should be able to think of a problem. The gradations were Shuva alone for the least, Shuva Yom Kippur for the next, Shuva Yom Kippur and suffering for the next, Shuva Yom Kippur and suffering and death for the next, right? Can you think of a problem? Suppose he does a transgression in January and... Huh? Died in February. Died in February. How's it work? So the answer is that death includes everything. Death includes Yom Kippur and suffering. And if you don't get there, the usefulness of Yom Kippur and suffering is to achieve an atonement before death, that you can be cleansed before death. For death finishes it. Whether you got the Yom Kippur or you didn't get the Yom Kippur. That's why I say that when you do tshuva, you guarantee that you leave this world clean. Okay, you with me? That's the Rambam's position. Surprisingly, because it's based on a Mishnah in Yuma, surprisingly, Ramchal in the Mesillas Yesharim has a different view. Or maybe it's kind of an application of the view in a certain way. Ramchal says one of the elements of tshuva is regret. Regret is painful. Regret means I wish I hadn't done it. If only I could go back. If only I could go back and do it again, I would do it differently. I hate myself for having done it. Regret is painful. Says somehow the regret can itself be enough pain to wipe out the transgression. Doesn't require more than that. It doesn't have to become ill, desperate, or have an accident, or appropriately done tshuva is enough to wipe it. The Rambam doesn't mention such an action. Rambam's quoting the Mishnah. There is this alternative. And having said all of this, I'll let you in on a little secret. I don't think I'll talk about this. I don't really understand how suffering works. Why suffering wipes out. I concocted a theory, but I'm not so confident in the theory that I really believe it. And I can't find any literature on it. What is it about suffering that does the job? But I found one reference which made me very happy. Everyone agrees that suffering can atone, it can wipe out the transgression. A related question is, must you suffer? Is suffering necessary? Or could it be a substitute for the suffering? Rabbeinu Yonah in the Shaarei Teshuva says, doing mitzvot, learning Torah, giving charity can substitute for the suffering. Suffering is not necessary. Well, Baruch Hashem, I have one source that goes halfway. You don't have to suffer. You can rehabilitate yourself positively rather than negatively. I don't understand how the negative works. So what are you suffering? What are you going to do with what you do? Anyway, I'm just telling you, that's the rule that the Rambam says there are four categories. Ramchal says you can do it all with the suffering of Tarata. And the Rabbeinu Yonah says that you can do it with positive. And if not, then the negative takes care of it. You with me? Okay, now, beginning in chapter 2, the Rambam talks about what tshuva is. This is a very interesting, subtle business. We're going to go through it slowly, piece by piece, and try to understand. First of all, he starts with what he calls tshuva gemura, complete tshuva. paragraph 1. In paragraph 2, he says, and what is tshuva? And gives a definition of tshuva. Now, between you and me, step down backwards. Why start with tshuva gemura, but I don't know what tshuva is yet? You know, it's sort of like explaining what wireless connections are before you know anything about electronics. Start explaining what electrons are, how they go through the wires, and so on. Then you can talk about shortwaves and how they travel without anything, and so on and so on. Why start with the shortwaves and then go back to the wires? The Rambam needs to tell us something. The whole purpose of this work is organization. So organize things and put them in an appropriate structure. Anyway, I'm just telling you that to keep it in mind. We're starting with complete tshuva. We don't know yet what tshuva is, and we'll get to what tshuva itself is in paragraph 2. Now it says, Eizoi tshuva gemura. What is complete tshuva? Says, Shabbat yodo dober shalom arbo. Does anybody understand Hebrew? If I read the Hebrew, does it help anybody? Yeah? Okay. So no, I'll read the chapter. This is when the very same thing in which he transgressed is presented to him. The Epshabiyot so he had the ability to do it. He perish, and he withheld himself. Also, and he didn't do it. The Pneyachuba. It means it's in the same circumstance where he failed. This time he succeeded in restraining himself. And the reason he restrained himself is because of Judah. Lonely hero, not because he's afraid. This time the police are watching. I don't want to take a chance. Lonely Kishlon Koach, such an effort to do this transgression. No. Rob breaks. I don't have the strength that he used to have. Ketzad, he gives the example, also taken from the Mishnah. He had illicit intercourse with a woman. Later he was alone with her. He still loves her. Ufo, his body still strong. Uba Medina, Shahab, our boys in the same place, meaning the social mores are the same. He's reproducing all the conditions. Or perish, and he didn't do it. For the lava, did not transgress. Zeru Baal Tshuva Gemura. This person is a master of complete tshuva. The master of complete tshuva. Anyway, two small accreditations. So let's think about this. He's a master of complete tshuva. It means he's tested. He's tempted by exactly the same temptation that he had before, and this time he's successful in overcoming. The immediate question arises. This is called complete tshuva. Should I look for this? Suppose I do something else. We'll talk about this in more detail. I'm setting it up now. Suppose I transgressed under certain circumstances. And I just make sure never to put myself under those circumstances again. I know I have weaknesses. Okay, I try to reform myself, build up myself, strengthen my character. I make very sure not to go back under those circumstances again. Am I missing out on something? The Rambam says, I have not achieved tshuva gemura, complete tshuva. Maybe when I feel strong enough, maybe I should go back to those old circumstances and be the hero and overcome the temptation under the original condition. Maybe I should do that. Now, from what I read to you, as I know a little bit, you can see an answer to my question. The Rambam, using the Mishnah in Yuma, is giving an example which answers my question directly. You have to use your intuition. What transgression did he commit? An illicit intercourse with a woman, right? And then he says, after time, he's alone with her. Nisyachei imo. Well, listen, boys and girls, we have rules about this. You're not allowed to be alone with a woman with whom sexual intercourse is forbidden. So how did he end up alone with her? Well, it's very simple, you know. They were in the elevator with 25 other people, and he's reading the newspaper, and 23 people got off, and then the door closed, and halfway between the floor, the elevator got stuck. He looked at his newspaper, and oh my God, there she is! You know, the same one! That happened by accident. It isn't as if he did it on purpose. It's utter to do this on purpose. So the Rambam's example tells us that it's not up to us to go looking for trouble. Even though he defines this as tshuva gemura, complete tshuva, it's not up to us to put ourselves under the temptation to test and see whether we have the ability to withstand. You with me so far? But that's iron. That's from the example. You know, you can't say it because you're not allowed to go into hiding because that's your under any conditions. Okay. Now the question is, but why then is it called Tshuva Gemura? Tshuva Gemura, it comes out, is something that I can't do. God has to cooperate. He has to put me in those circumstances. If he never puts me in the circumstances, he can't say to me, well, how come you didn't do Tshuva Gemura? Just ask him. Why ask me? Indeed, Rabbeinu Yonah and the Shari Tshuva avoids this problem in what, to us, I think, is the most intuitive way. Bayona says, if you strengthen yourself to the point where, conditionally, hypothetically, were you under those circumstances, you wouldn't perform the Aveira, that's complete truth. Because you now are immune. God knows whether you're immune or not. Now, you might not know. Okay, so you don't know. But the truth is, you've done it. If you've made yourself immune, you've done all that can be asked of you. You're not allowed to go looking for trouble. So God didn't choose to put you in trouble like that. Step four. That doesn't mean you're worse off. It doesn't mean you're more of a failure, that you didn't do something. Why the Rambam defines this as human when I do these following a Mishnah? But Rabbeinu Yonah also knows about the Mishnah. He understands, Rabbeinu Yonah, that the Mishnah is giving you an example, but it's not finding the only way to get there. Obviously, if you were capable of withstanding the test, that's good enough. Rambam doesn't say it. Now, I'll just say one more word, and I'll take a question. Now, some want to suggest ideas to explain the Rambam which are logical, but I don't believe they belong in the Rambam because they aren't part of his universal discourse. He never mentioned these ideas, never used these ideas about rectifying the damage to the world and so forth and so on. All that's fine and good, but the Rambam doesn't use that anyway. So, for the Rambam to be relying on that, I find it hard to accept. On the other hand, I've never seen a good explanation as to why the Rambam defines Tshuva Gemura, which sounds like that's my responsibility, and makes it depend upon something which I can't do. Yeah.
If we're trying to say that a person does the full part of the Tshuva, then there will be Zocha, and she will be an opportunity that replay
I guess this is one of those things which you're putting in a little divine providence, you know, which you'll apply to the person in those conditions. The Rambam never mentions anything like that anywhere. So you could put it in. It's just that Ikar Chasam and Sefer, as we said. You know, that's why it bothers me. People say you have to uproot what you planted, so you have to uproot it directly. That also is not anywhere in the Rambam. Something that's in his own terms, I don't know a good answer. Yeah.
Did you say that if you do purposely or willfully put yourself in the same situation again, and then do the right thing, that you know, disqualify yourself from?
I didn't say that. You're taking what I said a step further. I say it's wrong to put yourself under those circumstances. Now, a person who is guilty of putting himself under those circumstances and then succeeds in conquering the desire and not performing the Aveira, will that disqualify his tshuva? It might, because there's a category of what's called the mitzvah law of Aveira. A person who does a mitzvah through doing a transgression not credit to the mitzvah. Can't make a transgression a means to do a mitzvah. That's a whole bunch of qualifications. I think it's a moot point. Something has to be investigated. It might very well be that he disqualifies his Jew. It might, I don't know for sure, but it might. Okay, now, again, under the exact same circumstances, and he succeeds, it's called a Baal Tshuva Gemur. Now it says, V'imbo Shav El Bimezik Nuso, if he doesn't achieve it till he's old, U'ba'eshi Yashadu L'asos Ma'ashim Hayo said, he's now too weak to do what he used to do. Apo Pisha Eina Tshuva Ba'ula, even though this is not elevated, superior tshuva, mo'eles hilo, it is effective for him. The tshuva is effective. It will wipe out his transgressions. U'bal tshuvahu, he's a master of tshuva. Just now, not tshuva gemura. He's a master of tshuva. First category is master of complete tshuva. Now he's a master of tshuva. That's category two. Category three, a people over calling him up, even a person who performed the transgression his whole life, was a tshuva beyond his so-so, with the tshuva on his deathbed, who makes the tshuva so, and he died with his tshuva intact. Call Abonosa Nim Cholim. All his transgressions are wiped out. But what's missing? It's not a foul tshuva. It's not a foul anything. He did you. Did you at the last minute? Not foul anything. Now, can you tell me intuitively what makes the gradations here? From a foul tshuva, gemura, to a foul tshuva, to also tshuva without foul anything. What's getting less and less? Ability to do it again is getting less and less.
First case, it was you face the same situation. The second case, you're weaker. Third case, it's right before death. So
what is it in my tshuva that gets less and less? That's what's externally getting less and less.
That's the time you've waited.
Say
again?
The time you've waited.
The time. Well, okay, but what in my performance is less and less? What have I done less of?
Effort
to do what?
Not to
detach myself from it. To detach myself from the transgression. To expunge it from myself. In front of the transgression, the same circumstances, it's all there, and the desire is there. The effort to detach is very, very difficult. Later on, the person's older and doesn't have the same desires and doesn't have the same abilities. You know, for the 60-year-old to say, I'll never do bank robbing again. Correct. Because you can't jump over the wall, you know. Because you can't run away from the cop, because he's not capable of doing bank robbing again. For a person on his deathbed, he's got 20 minutes left, he says, okay, 20 minutes? Okay, that's about right. I'll never do it again in the next 20 minutes. Great. What kind of detachment is that? What is he detaching from? From a non-existent capability. From something that's not really there. So now, the Rambam says, the word Baal indicates his achievement. That's what he's achieved. I say, in terms of the positive mitzvah, how valuable is this positive mitzvah? It could be a Baal Tshuva Gemur. It could be a Baal Tshuva. The end of his life, he did it. He did it, and he gets credit for it, and all his transgressions are forgiven. But the positive commandment, the positive performance, is absolute minimum. So he gets there by the skin of his teeth. You know, it's like a kid who passes to the next grade with a 66 average. Like the South African, he gets in with a 41 average because their students are much worse. I mean, because their standards are much higher, and therefore they. Right? 66 average, he goes up a grade. Correct? With 66. He just made it. Don't you, on his deathbed, he passes. He passes, but his positive performance doesn't get any great marks of achievement because it was he did much less in doing it. This fits well with the position that it is a positive commandment. It's a positive commandment. These are grades of success in the performance.
The story in the Gemara, I forget who it is, but
Elizabeth
consorting with the various women, then goes woman, and then goes on top of the mountain in a fetal position, and then slowly dividing into the world to come.
Right.
That's this example, yeah.
That's
you can go with any mitzvahs, but no other.
Now, I'll just tell you one. Where did you learn that?
I heard about it, that's sure.
Okay, that's very important. That's what I was just going to say. That's good, because you know it. The Gemara says, hey, once this fellow did all sorts of terrible transgressions, and then was overcome with remorse, and he put his head between his knees, and he cried until he died.
What Gemara is that in?
And Abbas called, of course, from heaven said that he's invited straight into heaven. Now it says, Rabbeinu HaKadosh heard about this, and cried and said, a person can earn his place in the world to come in 1 hour. So the commentators ask, why did he cry? Isn't that a great thing? Think of the chesed, the love of the Holy Family, the world, that he can earn his place in the world in 1 hour. Why should you cry about that? So I think it's the Mashal. It's not the Mashal, one of the other commentators, I didn't see it. Says, yes, the Gemara said, Rambam holds that all his transgressions are wiped out, but they're not replaced with mitzvahs. The time just becomes blank. There's nothing negative there, but it's all blank. And therefore, there's still the tragedy of wasted potential. It's just that he won't be punished then. Which is a great thing, not to be punished. Still, there's a tragedy of wasted potential.
And it's the world to come. He got a reward.
Well, he did the mitzvahs also. Wasn't he the only did the mitzvahs? He did the mitzvahs. He did the mitzvahs. The mitzvahs was so overwhelming that apparently he would have lost out of the world to come. And now he wiped out the mitzvahs. But all that time and effort that he put into those mitzvahs has just now been neutralized. It hasn't been rehabilitated. Trying to trigger a response here.
Doesn't he have credit though?
Why?
He
does. But for the mitzvahs that he did, he gets credit.
So why
is it true?
The time and effort that he spent on the Averis is fine.
But he still has a mitzvah.
Correct. But still, like, think of, let's suppose that he spent 50% of his life on mitzvahs and 50% on Averis. Now, the 50% is wiped out. He ends up with a 50% life.
What's
wrong? So it's your 50-50 and you get rid of 150, it'll have to become 100.
It don't. Maybe it becomes 100. We're talking here about saying that all of its transgressions are wiped out.
So he only has 50% of the potential mitzvahs there.
He put on tefillin and he ate a cheeseburger.
Right.
Now if I wipe out the cheeseburger, he's left with the tefillin.
Right.
What about the time and the effort he put into the cheeseburger? That's just blank. That's the tragedy. With the time and effort he put in the cheeseburger, he could have learned to practice science. Right? That time is lost. That time and effort is just lost. It's lost. Finally, waiting for somebody to say this. We have a Gemara. The Gemara says that if a person does tshuva out of fear or awe, then deliberate transgressions become as if they were unintentional. But if he does tshuva out of love, transgressions become as if they were mitzvahs. What about that Gemara? Well, here's a little surprise. The Rambam never brings that Gemara. He never mentions that Gemara. All of Hilchos Tshuva never mentions that Gemara. Why not? I never heard anybody explain it. I have a speculative explanation. There's another Gemara. The Gemara says one of the behaviors of a Baal Tshuva is to change his name. As if to say, I'm not the person who did those things. I'm a different person. Now let me ask you. So those two things fit together. Changing your name. So you say, I'm not the person who did those things, on the one hand, and doing tshuva out of love so as to change them into mitzvot, on the other hand. Do those two things fit together?
No.
I don't think they do. Because you can't simultaneously wipe it off your record and claim credit for it. To claim credit for it, it's got to be there. Only you change it into a mitzvah. Now, the Rambam does bring the Gemara about changing a name. So my speculation is that the Rambam saw a contradiction between those two Gemaras, and he chose. He chose the Gemara of changing a name, and rejected the Gemara of changing transgressions into mitzvahs. That's my speculation as to why. The fact is, he doesn't bring it. So if we're talking about it, we'll in the Rambam. I'm not responsible for it. Okay?
Good.